Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, my wonderful audience. Today you're going to go to the gym. Yes, you are. You didn't think you were, but you must, because the holidays are here. And what most people do statistically, and this is quite researched, is gain anywhere from 5 to 15 to even 20 pounds. And then you go into the colder part of the year, sometime in January, where the nights are frosty, and you get that postseason depression because you put on 15 or 20 pounds and hurt yourself. We have a solution, and the solution is, before the holidays go into full gear, start getting to the gym. But this is not what you're going to do, because we've got all these blocks to it. And I want to investigate that today. What the holiday exercise program should be, what exercise is really about, how to do it, how not to get hurt at it, how to recover from it, how to eat food for it, how to take herbs for it, and just the whole thing. And I think I've pieced together a wonderful little 60 minutes for you guys. Before we start, announcements. The Medici Library. If you go on to straighttalk.cc, straighttalk.cc, that's the website, and you're going to see a tab up there for the Medici Library. Now, what is the Medici Library? Well, I am going to put together, as I have been doing, all those articles and insights and books that you can't get unless you have a seasoned veteran that's read everything and that's gotten multiple educations and that's put 20 years into it, compiled into one library. So it's a special library. It's not data. And that's the thing. I think a lot of people out there get impressed with data. In other words, the accumulation of information, which is good. It's interesting. You want to know it. You want to learn your facts, the names, the functions. But the bottom line is this. If you look at it from the standpoint of the doctor does what you do. You're the public. I'm the doctor. I've done what you did. I got interested, and I started studying, only I studied much, 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 much more intensely, spent much, much, much more money, and have spent much, much, much more time, not just for myself and my own story, but for others. So over the years, what the doctor does is really reflect the public. And what that means is we've read everything. We've taken all these degrees. And what does it come down to for us? It comes down to, for every 150 pages in a book, there's a paragraph that we extracted. For every degree we took, that was 4 years, maybe there's 3 months worth of vital data. And you understand that in relationship to your own profession, who you are as a professional, whether it's a mom or whether it's a lawyer or whether it's a construction worker, is the product of a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, the good old-fashioned way. And after 10 to 20 to 30 years, you think of yourself as a seasoned professional. Now, the advice you give your grandkids is a compilation of all of that. It's, in essence, teaching. And that's what a library should be. That's the Medici Library. So what we're going to put into this library are essence texts, not data accumulation. You can get data accumulation on internet. And this is kind of hilarious to me, because so many people are in love with the internet. And everybody comes into my office and they bring their particular list and stack of what they call their research. People come in and say, Doctor, I've done my research on this, and I look at their research, and their research is nothing more than 250 or 300 pages compiled from the internet. Guys, this is not research. It doesn't even approximate research. It doesn't teach you how to think. It's the analysis of data, which is thought, that gives you a functional understanding of how to navigate your health. And that's what you should mean by research. But you see, we've reduced this today because, and it's tempting, I do it myself, and it's got its place. So it's not a criticism, but anybody can pick a topic and get on the internet and pull up 200 pages on it. It's very superficial to think that that's what you call research. Just as it's very superficial to think that your functional knowledge in nutrition is a compilation of little articles that you read just stating the facts. So this library, then, is what I'd like to say to you if you were my grandchild, to give you an essence. So we're going to be expanding out on this tremendously now, and it's taken some time, but good things do. Anyone interested in the school, I have 3 spots left. We're running 2 schools concurrently. I've got 3 spaces left for my January 8th school. That will be the second one with mostly the same group. We had about 80% of those people come back. And I think we're going to really, really teach this beautifully over the year. So a couple of announcements. Now let's get to the guts of this. Principles of weight training. First thing is go to the gym. Don't do it at home. Statistically, you're going to get a better workout in the gym. That means you got to spend a little money. Gyms are not expensive. My advice, spend more than less. It's like for the holidays. If you're going to have dessert, which you're going to try to avoid, spend more than less. Or get the homemade stuff. And that's really why it's okay to have a little indulgence over the holidays, because that's when people put all the love into their food. But if you're not going to do it that way, the point is, if you spend a little more, you get a lot more in return. And the gym is a classic example of that. The extra 25 or 30 or 40 a month you spend on a gym may be the difference between showing up at that gym and not. So there's number one. Spend a little more. Don't do the cheap gym. Don't do the cold gym. Don't do the dirty gym. Don't do the crowded gym. Don't do the gym with the lighting that makes you look like you're green in the mirror. Other gyms are out there. They're the specialty gyms. They're owned and operated by people, often private entrepreneurs instead of corporations, that think more in terms of helping you rather than the company. And that's the way it should be. Don't look in the mirror. There's another one. People, and I've analyzed this, they want to go to the gym, and in their mind, they've got a vision of that experience. And that vision almost invariably includes the moment into which they look in the mirror. Because this is kind of the way we've sold people on gyms. Gyms are places where you go and you stare at your body. That's what prevents you from getting to the gym. So have a space in the gym. Go to the gyms where you can do a full workout without looking in the mirror, because there is no mirror there, hopefully. There's another mistake you make is you compare yourself to the person you're not anymore. You are not 18. Really, maybe I should call this show, You Are Not 18. We did a freedom clinic the other week at the health center in Santa Monica, and I had a lovely woman come in, and she was tremendously concerned because her hair was thinning. Now, this woman had more hair than anybody I've ever seen. And if you've seen any picture of me, you know, I don't feel too bad for people, okay, that have hair issues. And the point is, this woman had the most lush, fertile head of hair I've ever seen. But she had lost, in the last couple of years, about 10 or 15% of that hair. And at 40 years old, that's normal. And when I told her, look, as you age a little bit, the hair is just going to thin out a little. That's okay. And she didn't like that. It's the truth. She didn't like it. Now, you can minimize it, I said. I said all the tactful things. But here's the bottom line. When you're 40, you're not 18. And this is what keeps a lot of people away from the gym. They walk in, they look in the mirror. Then they look at someone that's 18 and don't do that. And then they compare themselves to that person, or they remember how it used to be when they just hit the gym and a week later they'd be 5 less pounds. And then if there's not, something's wrong. And if there's something wrong, we don't want to go to the gym because it just reminds us that something's wrong. Nonsense. You got to have a different perspective on this. And that is just show up. Just show up. Success, 80% of success is just showing up. So if you're tired, if you're feeling lazy, if you don't want to do a workout, if you're down on yourself, if you stuffed your face last night and you gained 3 pounds on the scale, and you're just so depressed you don't want to get to the gym, and you definitely don't want to work out, and you didn't get any sleep because of this, that, or the other thing, just show up. Even if you get to the gym, even if you park your car outside the gym, walk into the gym, wash your hands, and go home, just show up. I mean that. Tongue in cheek, yes, but very serious. Just show up to the gym. Very, very simple. Don't look in the mirror. Remember you're not 18. Just show up, even if it's for 5 minutes, and start. Now, once you get over that hump, and now you're in the gym, principles. The first principle is strength versus flexibility. So we're going to talk about weight training. I'm not going to do too much cardio. We can do that on another show. But I want to talk about weight training, strength training, toning. Number one, get this one straight. There's strength and there's flexibility. There's tone and there's flexibility. You might not understand this yet, but to do a push-up or a pull-up or a sit-up or take some 5-pound dumbbells or barbells and start to work with them or even use the treadmill, just as much as you have to contract muscle, you have to stretch muscle. So I want to try to give you a visual on this, and that is the muscle is like a 1-foot-long piece of rope. So picture a 1-foot-long piece of rope. When you contract that muscle, for you to have strength, that 1 foot becomes 6 inches. It contracts, and we all know that. If you contract your arm, your biceps pop out up in the arm there. We all know that muscle. Right, that's the muscle we show off in the gym, or Hercules stands, or Superman stands in front of the audience and flexes his biceps. Well, that 1 foot bicep becomes a 6-inch bicep as we contract it. And as we contract it, we have strength. Now, here's the point. When that muscle lengthens again, it may not lengthen to 1 foot. So it was 1 foot, it contracts to 6 inches, and when you're not using it, instead of lengthening to 12 inches, another foot, it only lengthens to 9 inches. And then you use that muscle over a period of years, and you don't stretch it out. And every time you relax it, it never returns to its original length. Now, because it doesn't return to its original length, eventually a whole bunch of bad things happen. But number one, if you start trying to get power now out of a muscle that's only 9 inches long instead of 12 inches, you have less strength. You have less power. And ultimately, if that muscle tries to contract to 6 inches, but it's only 8 inches long, if it's that short, that's when you start straining muscle. So you really lose strength. So power, the strength during contraction, is a definite function that of the muscle returning to its original length. And the only way the muscle does that is if you stretch it. So flexibility and strength are inextricably tied into each other. The second thing is that muscle. So take that muscle in your arm there, that bicep. That muscle inserts. Ties itself in, it glues itself to the bone. That's why when muscles contract, your bones move. And each end of that muscle that's glued to the bone is glued with a tendon. Now, you guys know what tendons are. Down there, just above your heel bone, is your Achilles tendon. Behind your knee, there are tendons. Right in the crease of your elbow, there are tendons. All of your muscles, yeah, those ropey things, tie into bone with a tendon. Guess what? Strength is not just a function of the muscle. It's a function of the tendon. So you can go into a gym and you can train the muscle, or you can train the tendon, or you can train both. And I'm going to explain in a couple of minutes how that's reflected in different types of exercise in the gym. And if you don't know this, what you end up is big, fat muscles, bulky muscles that don't get flexible. So over time, you lose strength, even though the muscle might have a bigger size. And because you don't train the tendon, and we'll explain that in a minute, you are way more likely to strain the muscle. So I want you to look at two bodies. I want you to look at the gymnast's body. I want you to look at the boxer's body or the martial artist's body, the streamlined, sinewy, flexible, toned one. But there's muscle there versus the muscle that's puffed out. That's the puffed out body versus the toned, lanky, sinewy body. And health is some hybrid of both of them. But as far as weight training is concerned, people have this idea that it's about size. This is an important concept because I've seen people ruin their careers this way. Back in the old days, in my teens and 20s, I got into all of this field training athletes, being one myself, and studying the different sciences behind different ways of doing these things. And one thing that America's produced, it's produced the Arnold Schwarzenegger type of body when the gyms exploded back in the 70s. You know, it used to be the YMCA and the YWCA, but by the 1970s, all right, starting with Jack LaLanne, the famous Jack LaLanne, who was a master at understanding these things, but the Jack LaLanne gyms, if you guys remember in the 70s, this was the beginning of the explosion into the gyms, and they were pretty low cost, and then they became the higher-end spas, and this whole thing has evolved, but America pumped off the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s with this Arnold Schwarzenegger type of physique. Now, this has some advantages to it, but it's got a lot of disadvantages, too. And it comes down to this inherent distinction between strength and flexibility. So how do you train the tendon? How do you train the tendon? And not so much the belly of the muscle. Well, when you go into the exercise, so let's say you're going to do a push-up, or let's say you're going to do a pull-up or a chin-up, or let's say you're going to be on your back on the weight bench and you're going to take two 10-pound weights and you're going to open your arms with them, drop the weights all the way to the floor and come up and bring both weights together like what we call, if you understand this, the butterfly pose. In other words, every single exercise you do has to be done from extreme extension. Before you contract your muscle, you have to be totally stretched out. And that first 10% of the contraction is where you train the tendon. So I'll just use a chin-up as an example, and you'll get the point. If you're doing a chin-up and you're hanging from a bar, and it applies to you if you can't do a chin-up, so don't flip if this is almost absurd for some of you. But if you're doing a chin-up, if you're hanging from a bar, you know those people that do the chin-ups from a half-flexed position, so they go all the way up and then they only come down 50%, and then they come all the way up and they only come down 50%? That's what's wrong. You would have to come down all the way. So your arm is completely straight. So the elbow joint is at a 180-degree angle. It's straight. In the first 10 or 15% of that contraction, as you've just come up about 10%, that's when you stress the tendon. That's when you stress the tendon. This is a big concept, guys. Because you can take barbells, free weights, and I'm going to make a strong argument for free weight in a moment. You can take free weight anytime you want, and you can exercise any muscle in your body from an extremely stretched out position. I'll give you a wacky one, but this will prove my point. Suppose you wanted to strengthen your neck. Now, nobody really does that, but people do it in athletics all the time. When you box or you do martial arts, to prevent yourself from being knocked out or choked out, you want to put about 2-3 inches around of muscle around your neck. Because when you get hit in the jaw, maybe this isn't the best example, but I'm going to use it because you'll get my point. When you get hit in the jaw, you got this big, thick neck like a football player or a boxer, and you can take the concussion or the shock. So some people actually have to thicken their neck. But here's my point. If you lie off, a massage table on your side, and you tie a 10 or 15-pound weight to your head, and we've got all sorts of machines that do that, and you take your neck and you let it lay off the side of the table until you absolutely stretch your neck, and that's when you try to contract your neck with that 10 to 15-pound weight on your head. That's when you try to contract it about 5 to 10 degrees from that stretched-out position, just like you contract in a chin-up from that stretched-out position. And you can do this against weight or no weight. It doesn't matter. But out of that deeply stretched position, you will contract your tendon. And then you forget about the muscle. You just train the tendon. So in a set of 5 or a set of 10 or 3 sets of 10 or 3 sets of 5, whatever you end up doing in terms of repetition, 80% of it would be to just contract the tendon, and maybe 20 to 25% of it, you'd complete the exercise and hit the belly of the muscle. That's called training the tendon. You know what kind of muscles that makes? Your muscles get like steel, but your muscles don't get bulky. And you see this in Pilates. Joseph Pilates understood this. You see? Gymnastics understands this. So we ought to be training like gymnasts, except it's kind of precarious to use the word gymnast because many people can't do that gymnastic workout. But you can do Pilates, and if you can't and you just go to the gym, you can train with weights this way. Now, I say free weights. It's another discussion. Every gym has an entire room given to the universal gym. Those are those gyms where you put your body into the machine and you just push or pull or whatever you might do. They are not superior to free weights. Do not do them against free weights. And there's a reason. Free weights build the tendon. Universals just build the muscle. There's a huge difference long term. So let me give you an example. When you take a barbell and you kind of put it on your shoulders and you bend down in a squat. So you're working your thigh muscles now and your gluteal muscles, your buttocks muscles. And you've got this weight. You see these guys in the Olympics all the time. They're the guys that do the squats. And you have this big weight on your shoulders and you're dropping down and coming up and you're squatting and coming up and squatting and coming up to build the quads, the thigh muscles. When you have free weight, as you're bending down and coming up, you have to balance that weight. Think of that weight when it gets a little heavy, and the left side of you is tipping, and then the right side is tipping, and the left is tipping. If you really look at somebody when they're using free weights, they're kind of shaking as they're moving with the weight. And the reason they're shaking is a lot of their energy is given to balancing the weight. Well, what part of your muscle line balances the free weight? It's the tendon. The tendon is what has to contract with power and integrity to prevent you from tipping over, since you are balancing the weight. When you get on a universal and you do these exercises, you're not going to tip. The universal takes care of the balance part of it. You're not going to fall down, or the weight's not going to fall out of your hand if you can't balance it, so you don't need to build the tendon as much. So free weights are superior. Anybody really into the guts of sports, athletic achievement, or even just working out that's really studied this stuff will always use the free weight. They're superior. And then, of course, what you call calisthenics. Now, let's talk about calisthenics. What do we mean by calisthenics? All the sit-ups. the squats without weights. I'd even say to some extent the cardio you do is a calisthenic because you're moving your body and that creates some resistance. And against that resistance, your muscles tone. So let's talk about toning the muscles of the body, whether it's through push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups, chin-ups, cardio, I'm going to throw into that, spin classes, Pilates classes. Here's what you got to understand about toning. Well, number one, toning's fantastic, right? Because it gives the muscle endurance. And pound for pound, it gives it strength. So you have a pound for pound strength. And you have endurance. You can keep using that muscle all day long because that muscle, the muscle cell, has built into itself all sorts of capacities to allow you to sustain repetitive exercise. But here's a big mistake. And again, these are all pearls now. Here's a big mistake that people make with calisthenics. Number one, they don't respect that you have to have some degree of size. Size. Because what people with calisthenics do is they start to, and this is inevitable, this is just natural human nature, they delude themselves into thinking that they have a strength they don't have. Lots of people with calisthenics that do calisthenics to tone strain their muscles. And when they strain their muscles, they do all the right things to rehabilitate that muscle. But what they never do is put weight on the muscle. They never thicken the muscle. So theoretically, say, if you have 10-inch or 12-inch biceps, if you're a toned female, you see this with females all the time. So ladies, really listen up on this one. You know, guys like to bulk out their muscles. If a guy's calf is a little too thick, he doesn't care. He likes that. Women don't. So ladies, very susceptible to this issue. You understand what it is to lose weight. You understand what it is to get to the gym. You understand what it is to tone. And you start toning, and then there's the injury. And I've seen this so many times. And then it's 3 months, and it's an injury still. And then it's 6 months. And then all of a sudden, you've got these injuries in your body, and you kind of don't even know how they occurred. They just appeared. And it's been a year, and it's hurting your workout program. You may be one of those females. And if you are, one of the reasons you will not heal, no matter what you do, is because you had to thicken the muscle. You had to put on a thicker thigh. Or a slightly thicker calf, or a thicker bicep, or a thicker area in the pectoral region, or even a thicker trunk, or thicker muscular in the neck. Now, I'm not talking about something that's aesthetically unreasonable. You may need to put on half an inch in circumference or an inch of muscle. So there's a balance, right, between strength, tone, flexibility, and just the thickness of the muscle. So what do the weightlifters do? They don't stretch, and they don't train the tendon. What do the toners do? The Pilates people do. A lot of people that do yoga. A lot of people that do dance. What do? They love to keep their bodies light and flexible and slender and slick and moving and graceful. Fantastic. Great idea. But what lots of them do, what they often do when they get injured, or they stay susceptible to injury because they don't thicken the muscle. Now, if you love to tone, one of the greatest ways to thicken the muscle is to put weight on the body. Yeah. It's like if you had a weighted vest, and you can go on Google, and you can go on eBay, and you can buy weights for any body part. But one of the great things you can use are weighted vests. When we used to box in the gyms years ago, we would take boxing gloves and we would send them to the shoemaker and he would put heavy metal or lead inside the boxing glove. So each boxing glove would have another 5 to 7 pounds. Years ago, Rocky Marciano, he'd put on a weighted vest and then he'd swim underwater for astronomical amounts of time. He'd tread water underwater with a weighted vest on. And over the years, you're super athletes. And there are people who dedicate themselves. I did for about 10 years, and then I got involved in higher level, other levels of medicine, I should say. But you have athletes who study all this, like extreme science. I find this topic fascinating. It's a little bit I want to water you with so you can get to the gym for these holidays. But if you're into toning the muscle and you fit the description of somebody who's a little bit light in terms of size, what you want to do is apply some form of weight to the body during the exercise. So if you were doing push-ups, if you were doing chin-ups, if you were doing pull-ups, if you were doing sit-ups and you have a weighted vest, you have a wonderful way then to move the body, to keep the coordination, to stay right in the sequence of the exercise, and yet to do it against the best kind of resistance money can buy. And that will thicken the muscle while it tones the muscle. Fantastic way. Don't use weights on the ankles. You can, but don't run with weights on the ankles. That is not a good idea. And for those of you who like to run or even walk with the weights on the hands, walk with the weights on the chest. And then for those of you who like to walk, get the hills. For those of you who like to do the treadmill, and walk if you can instead of the treadmill. But if you have to do the treadmill, cross train. So 20 minutes on the treadmill, 20 minutes on the Stairmaster, 20 minutes on any one of these assorted gizmos that your better gyms will have, and go to a better gym. We're going to talk about cross training in a moment. Now, low impact versus high impact. For those of you with joint issues, if you have joint issues, you have to look into water. If you look into water, you have to look into natural salt water. And there are gyms that have natural salt water pools. There are people who have natural salt water in their backyard. Stay out of chlorine. That is my advice to you, my strong advice. I think in terms of cost-benefit, chlorination in public pools is a no-no. It is a toxic, toxic element. Do not listen to any opinion outside this. Study all the other opinions that concur. And stay out of chlorinated pools. Very, very difficult, very hard for the body to deal with on a constant basis. But there's enough people now into salt water pools, natural salt water pools. If you can't do that, a natural salt water, right, what you learn to do is low weight, high repetition, but with proper body mechanics. And again, this is another entirely different topic that has to do with biomechanics and strength training. In other words, how your bones align really determines whether or not you're going to be able to sustain the exercise, even if you have tender, precarious joints. And I'm going to leave that for a moment because I want to get into other things, but if you're dealing with joint problems, I'll try to get that towards the end of the show. Now, the liver is the organ that's very tied into building musculature. The heart, yes, for cardio, but the liver plays a really important point. And this is why anybody that's in the rehab of things, or anybody that's hitting the gyms again to work out, it's the time to start flushing the liver, because the liver controls the tendons. Don't forget that. And the tendon is what has to be flexible. So all those liver and gallbladder flushes, check the website. I think it was show 20. We did a pretty in-depth job with flushing out the liver. But if you're going back into the workout routine and you start flushing the liver, you'll start finding the tendon more flexible. And again, that builds that important sequence. Now, what do you eat before a workout? How does that go? Tons of opinions about this. One thing for sure. After the workout, drink tons of water. Common sense? Yes. No problem. Drink tons of water. Drink water until you don't want it, and then don't make this mistake. Or rather, I should say, make sure you do this. After you quench your thirst, after you eat, you must have high-quality animal protein. You need to take your organic, free-range, grass-fed, and if you're looking to build muscle, nothing builds it better than beef. Lots of arguments about this. Talk to athletes. Athletes that experiment with a very open mind across the entire gamut. And if you're that one unique person, you know, I hear the argument all the time, well, gorillas have muscles and all they eat is grass. And I don't want to deal with these arguments anymore. Because if you really, across the board, experiment with different ways of eating, okay, from the carb thing to the protein thing to the raw protein thing, you're going to find that when people hit animal protein after the workout, after they've quenched their thirst, they build their muscles better, 9 times out of 10. And I'm always open to exceptions, yes, but 9 times out of 10, you'll see your body will crave animal protein if your palate's clean. And, of course, you bring in raw fat with that animal protein. So I think it's almost a hands down. And, again, you'll watch this with a lot of athletes. Now, it's before you work out that the issue about food is controversial. And there's something called the carb kick. And we all know the carb kick. You get up in the morning and you have buttered toast. You get up in the morning and you eat some oatmeal. You come in the morning and you eat your rice mixed in with some vegetable or whatever it might be, some potato dish. And I want to tell you, a lot of people, and again, this is, it'll sound like it's contradicted past shows, but it's not, because this is for people who are going to work out and they're going to get into that 60, 75, 90 minutes. The Surgeon General 3-4 years ago changed his attitude about exercise. Remember, it used to be 20 minutes of walking 3 times a week. I got to tell you, this doesn't cut it. It's been changed. It's like 75 to 90 minutes of exercise 4 to 5 times a week. There's a very different version of it. And clinically speaking, which is the bottom line, 60 to 75 to 90 minutes 5 days a week is more like what you do if you're going to see change in your body and you're going to sustain your health and you're going to keep your weight off. But my point is at the prospect of exercising on that level of intensity, some people need the carb high. Some people need to flush blood sugar into the blood in a way that normally isn't the best thing to do. And we all know what that carb high is. Because if they keep their blood sugar at 80, which is really where it should be, their body can't maintain it at 80 when you start really turning on the gas. So if your blood sugar is 80 or 90 when you start the workout, some people can't sustain it. They can't mobilize enough fat or muscle into the blood. And so you actually need to have enough stored carb. Now, what do we mean by stored carb? Covered this in past shows. We covered this a few weeks ago on diabetes. Stored carb is glycogen in the muscle cell or glycogen in the liver. It's stored sugar. And for as much as I'm constantly talking about not doing that, and that is healthy, I guarantee you not to do that. Before you go to work out, that's when you want your stored carb. So a lot of people can just get up in the morning, all right, and eat a high-carb breakfast before they go out onto the track or into the gym. And then they've got that extra kick. Now, that kick, sustained over 30 minutes, gives them the time. It compensates them for a liver or set of adrenal glands that just might be a little too weak to allow to be responsible for maintaining blood sugar if you didn't have that carb breakfast. So it compensates some people. Some people will say, look, when I work out, I need a carb before I work out. If you're that person, knock yourself out. Just have a good carb. Just have a more low glycemic carb. So don't drink Coca-Cola and have three donuts. Get up and do the oatmeal or whatever it might be. You know what a good carb is. It's a low glycemic carb. And you utilize that. That gives you the kick. Then, after your body starts to warm up, after the blood starts to flow, after heat, heat is so important in a workout. You know what that's like. You get to that ice cold track in the morning. Or they didn't put on the heat in the gym. Or it's 32 degrees somewhere out deep in the valley or whatever, and you just don't feel like moving your body. So anything that allows you and a high carb diet in the morning will help you get that thermogenic response. It'll help the metabolism kick in. It's more easy to get the blood flowing. And then after you burn off those carbs in the first 30 minutes, then you transition more smoothly into maintaining your blood sugar with the fat that you're trying to burn. And that's the key there. So 9 times out of 10, I wouldn't support the carb. But for the workout in the morning, to maybe get 600, 700, 800 calories of a complex carb into the morning meal, super valuable for some people. If that's you, just knock it out. And again, after you're finished, you hydrate. And you want your urine, after you work out, to have that nice light yellow color. If you're urinating dark after you work out, that tells you you're going to dehydrate. You are way off to the wrong start there. The only time you want to tolerate a darker color in the morning when you urinate is when you first wake up. After that, and definitely after you work out, if that urine's coming out too dark, keep drinking, because you're running around grossly dehydrated. And in a moment, we're going to get into what happens after the workout. And one of the worst things that can happen for you, for your weight loss, for the strength, for the flexibility, for the soreness, or avoiding the soreness, is to exercise in a too dehydrated a state. So after you're totally certain that your thirst is quenched, you want to get to the animal protein, rare, charred, say, or raw, and check the website for the data on that. But the point is, that's when you get it. And if it can't be red, then let it be fish or chicken or turkey or whatever you want to do, as long as it's clean as you can get, as clean as your budget can afford. But that's the time to put the protein in. That's the time to work the body to maintain the blood sugar all the way into the evening, just based on meat and fat. That midday meal after the workout, that's when you knock it out. Now, herbs. What are the herbs for the workout? How do you spend your money most intelligently on the herbs? And can herbs really get you where you want to go? Well, first let me say this. As far as weight loss, without the workout, don't really think in terms of the herbs as making you lose weight. That's in any way, in a sense, going to compensate you for not working out. Proper dietary regimen, getting your sleep, counting your calories, eating the right foods. I don't think anything surpassed that. So these quick, easy gimmicks, I've spent dozens of dollars. I play the market all the time. If there's something new, I just got to buy it, check it out, give it to people, see if it's valid. I'm sorry. I don't think anything really lives up to the sensational claims that are made. But real high-quality adaptogenic herbs make a difference in conjunction that I think is worth the expenditure if you can. So what do we mean, first of all, by adaptogenic herbs? Rhodiola, cordyceps, reishi, ashwagandha, deer antler. There's a whole slew of these things. Flower pollen, bee pollen, royal jelly from the beehive. These are God's gifts to us that aren't even that well understood chemically. Believe me, they're not that well understood. But we know through years and years of experience that when we feed these things to people, especially athletes, long years ago, I've designed programs with herbs for athletes. Always so much fun because, you know, athletes are so sensitive to their bodies. You have to be successful in athletics. And so you design these programs with these wonderful herbs. You make sure they're potent, very clean, high quality, and then you give them to the athlete in the right dosages. And they just cross the finish line first. If you're really into working out for that 6 month, 9 month, 12 month period, and you got to drop the weight and tone up and get back into the game, rhodiola, cordyceps, reishi. Cordyceps is in a product called Adrenaven. Reishi is in a product called Reishi Immune. Rhodiola is in a product called Adaptogen. Ashwagandha and deer antler are in something called Gold 360. And the point is that some herbs allow the cell to utilize oxygen in a more efficient way, to utilize glucose into the Krebs cycle in a more efficient way. Creatine, okay, muscle boost powder, as we'll call it. Very nice, what we call phosphate donor into the production of adenosine triphosphate, which is, in the end, what your cell is producing, ATP, to give you that pumped up, super energized feeling that you want halfway through your workout. And the adaptogenic herbs, whether they're delivering more oxygen, whether they're allowing the cell to use the oxygen more efficiently, whether they're bringing more blood in, whether they're allowing the hormones like adrenaline, testosterone, to be produced at higher levels or to be utilized more efficiently, whether they're mobilizing larger amounts of sugar from the muscle and the liver into the blood to give you immediate energy. There are so many things that adaptogenic herbs do. But if you get into the adaptogenic herb game, the first thing you got to understand is dosage. And in my experience, if your mindset is, say, gee, I want to see about bumping up the adrenals, so I'll take some cordyceps or Adrenaven, and I'll take two a day, or adaptogen, I'll take three a day. In my experience, if you're really going to do it, what you do is you play with the herb. You play with the dose of the herb until you get it up high enough so that you're sure you felt it. Don't say, I did six Adrenaven before I worked out and I didn't feel it, so I guess the herb doesn't work, because doses vary with people. And you can only have a general idea. And what you read on the bottle might not be the dose for you. And you may conclude, therefore, that the reishi or the cordyceps or the rhodiola or the deer antler or the ashwagandha or the flower pollen or the bee pollen or the propolis or the royal jelly just didn't work. It doesn't work. Don't do that in this case. You take them in and you start ramping them up. So if I'm dealing with a 25, 30-year-old athlete, a 35-year-old athlete, I might give him a day 40 cordyceps or 40 Adrenaven and 40 reishi. Wow. But if you want to look at an athlete that says, I feel like I'm on the high of my life, I don't even feel my legs as I sprint towards the finish line, okay, well, that's the dose that it took. Now, that may not be your dose, and you may not need to feel that. But I can guarantee you that your dose is something you have to explore for you. And don't think it's going to be one capsule a day or two capsules a day with this kind of a expectation in mind. When you want to go to the gym and feel like something made a difference, you may be dosing a little bit higher than you think. Now, hopefully I'm wrong, and you can get away with very low dosages. But in my experience, I don't think it's going to work that way. There's nothing wrong then two to three times a week. I do it all the time. When I want to jump another mile on the track, or when I want to go into a 75 to 90 minute workout, I'm going to bring in heavy doses of adaptogenic herbs just on that day that I want to jump. And you'll wait for that day. Like today's a perfect day, right? It's sunny, it's cool, but it's warm enough. It'll get to 60 and there's no wind. You can feel it today. If you were out on the track today, you might go that extra mile. If you were going up the hill today, you might go that extra mile. If you were in the gym today, you might put a little bit more weight on, or you might go for the extra set of reps. On those days, and you can sense them, if you work with this, you'll sense them. This is when you bring in the adaptogenic herbs, because once your body gets to that new standard, you want to meet that standard. But you have to remember, you're not 18. If you don't feel like it, just show up and don't compare yourself to others. Or you're going to get sore muscles. So what do you do for sore muscles? Well, we've given you the med body baths, and you've got the clay packs, and you've got the magma, and you can put them on your tissues, especially these baths. You can soak in these baths, and then after that you can do these foot baths, the Medi foot bath. And the combination of those things, fantastic. Going to pull out the acids, going to put in the right minerals, going to relax the body, going to neutralize the acid, and a couple of tablespoons of what? Of acetic acid, of vinegar. Going to neutralize the lactic acid. See, because the lactic acid has a different solubility, and it neutralizes the acetic acid in the vinegar has a different solubility, and it'll neutralize the lactic acid, but it'll stay in solution. The lactic acid tends to precipitate out and crystallize into the tissue, so it holds acid in your tissue. So again, it's another trick, similar to the trick I talked about when we use potato or potassium citrate to have the citrate kick out the hydroxyapatite and steal the calcium, so you don't granulate calcium into your arteries and other body parts, into your kidneys for kidney stones. Well, this lactic acid that we produce as athletes that creates all this soreness, well, it would flush out if you hydrated, right? It will flush out. Except it tends to crystallize. And once it gets into crystallization, then it doesn't flush out efficiently. Well, if you put the vinegar in, remember traditionally, right? You've always heard that there were these vinegars you could use. Well, you can use vinegar. Vinegar's acetic acid. And acetic acid will stay in solution. So it neutralizes the lactic acid and then flushes out more easily. So from clay baths to using vinegar, a good organic vinegar, to once every 2 to 3 weeks, getting used to deep tissue cross fiber massage. And I've talked, I did a whole show on massage the other week. That deep tissue cross fiber massage once a month. Not to relax. I mean, to relax, but that's not the key here. If you're going back to the gym once a month, whether you're running or whether you're doing weights, whether you're toning or you're building size, you want to bring in and have a relationship with a real good body worker. They take the tissue and they do that sports massage, but really, sports massage is a word. The functional technique is to grab the tissue, go deep, cross-fiber it to the bone, and grind out the lactic acid and grind out the adhesions. Otherwise, you don't get blood into the muscle, you don't drain out the acid, you don't drain out the venous blood, and you're way more susceptible then to a buildup of these different poisons. And that's what slows your growth down, and it will take you to the point where you may risk injury. Now, if you're injured, what do you do? Well, I'm going to give you a concept. We're probably going to have to pick up on this on another show because we're getting to the point here. But here, for those of you with musculoskeletal injury, this is what hasn't been done. If you've suffered chronically, there's concepts. And the concepts are meant to work with integrity. In other words, in an integrated state with each other. When you sprain or strain a body part and you can't get rid of it, or you have a joint issue and you can't get rid of it, there's concepts. One, you have to move the toxic blood out of the site. Move the toxic blood out of the site. Cupping in acupuncture is to do this. All the herbs we give people to thin the blood. When you put med body packs, clay packs on your tissues, what do you think it does? It moves out the blood. To be followed and integrated into the hand on the tissue to cross-fiber the acid and the deeply coagulated blood out of the tissue, into which then you have to stretch the tissue until somebody feels a new alignment, a solid alignment. So take an ankle. If you sprained your ankle and it's 2 years later, or you've got back pain and it's a year later, or you blew out your shoulder or elbow or wrist, you've got to clean out the coagulated blood, because when you hurt yourself, you bleed into the joint. You bleed into the muscle, bleed. You have to cross-fiber it out as you move the blood out with the herbs or the packs. Then you have to lengthen that tissue, so you have to stretch it. And as you stretch it, you have to start to feel like the bones become realigned. So if it's in the ankle, like you're on your feet with the right weight again, like it's distributing correctly. If you don't get that alignment feeling after you've moved out the blood, cross-fibered the acid, lengthened the tissue, if you don't get that alignment feeling, you're never going to heal. After you get that alignment feeling, you're going to what? Strengthen it in the gym again. So moving the blood, cross-fibering the acid, lengthening the tissue, strengthening the muscle, feeling your alignment, and that's how you heal it. And we'll do a whole show on this pretty soon, because, yeah, I said a lot. StraightTalk.cc, Dr. Vincent Medici. Wonderful show. My phones are down today, so I can't answer questions today. I'm sorry. You have a fantastic pre-holiday workout. Go out there and do it. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you next week. Ta-ta.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.